like a Scientology meeting, but I hope all of you have your checkbook.
Check sheets, okay.
I'm selling shares. I'm selling shares in a corporation which has found a $2 million check that was forged by someone in L. Ron Hubbard's account. Now, by one means or another, and I completely disclaim any responsibility in connection with this incident, the $2 million ended up in my checking account. But since the Church of Scientology found out about it, I've been having trouble trying to get the $2 million out of my bank accounts in the United States into bank accounts in the Cayman Islands. So, for shares of stock in a corporation which I formed for the purpose of moving this money out of the United States, I'm going to turn to either people that I don't know at all or to Sea Org members, because they seem to be pretty good at that. So, a lot of you I know and a lot of you I don't know, but I know that you're pretty familiar with the workings of the Church of Scientology. And therefore, since you've been willing to pay the amount of money you've been willing to pay over the past whatever years you've been involved, I'm sure you're probably going to be interested in my little scam. Now, most of you have probably seen the original pictures of me before. I'm the mafia villain here with you. That's all it turned out. And I'm the Boston attorney, one of the Boston attorneys linked to Underworld plot and to Underworld and plot to loot Hubbard estate. Now, in the past 5 years that I've been involved in litigation against this organization, they've said and done a lot of things. Recently, since the Armstrong case, which a lot of you have probably heard about, their attacks have intensified to a great deal, a great extent. And I've become the subject of several Freedom Magazine articles. And in the one I just referred to, for those of you who aren't educated on the subject, I have been accused by the Church of Scientology, whoever that is, I hope I can get across to you the elegant simplicity of this plot. While I was conducting legislative hearings for the city of Clearwater in May 1982, I was at the same time working with con men internationally to get a hold of L. Ron Hubbard's checks. And while I was presenting evidence before the legislative commission in the city of Clearwater about the what I consider to be and what a lot of other people consider to be a great deal of wrongdoing by the organization, at the same time, I was out enlisting the aid of this Alaa Fadili Tamimi, who currently is residing in an Italian prison, to get a hold of Ron's check, forge the check, and send Tamimi into a bank in New York, or his brother, into a bank in New York to cash the check. Now, this plot was so well conceived and so well thought out that the brother of Tamimi forgot to bring any identification with him. So he wanted the cash, a $2 million check with no identification. He had a Georgetown University student ID. Now, the next thing you know, after a period of years go by, and after the Armstrong case, which is of some significance in this whole story because of the black PR policy and the ebb and flow that you can create with PR to turn the tide when the tide is heading toward truth, to stem that tide, someone learned real early, maybe Ron, that the way to do it is attack the attacker
with black PR. And it has amazing effect. But whoever conceived of this particular ridiculousness was so bothered and so terrified of something which I submit to you, as I'm going to explain, is fact, data, truth. Someone was so terrified that they had to concoct a scheme as ridiculous as this to stop the dissemination of truth that was coming out of the Armstrong trial. And they had to do it immediately. This thing followed probably within 4 weeks, Judge Breckinridge's decision in that case, which we're going to talk a little bit about. Now, just think of this for a minute. According to their own magazine, they pay, they being, let's call them Miscavige and Broker. Miscavige and Broker, who have hired Ingram, who, for those of you who don't know who Eugene Ingram is, he's a private detective in Los Angeles who's been thrown off the Los Angeles police force for pimping, running a house of prostitution, aiding narcotics dealers. He's been indicted. Well, he had a letter that said that he worked for Sherman Linsky, who was the attorney for L. Ron Hubbard. So this fellow Ingram is in bed with Linsky, Miscavige, and Broker. Ingram procures an affidavit from Alaa Fadili Tamimi saying that in March 1982, he met with me, he had all these conversations with me, and together we concocted this scheme to steal one of Ron's checks, forge it for $2 million, and try to cash it, right in the middle of the Clearwater hearings. Ingram admits to paying Tamimi $25,000 for the affidavit. And what I just told you is not, I mean, that's public information. He admits to doing that. He ran a reward for $100,000, but he admits to paying, and I hope you appreciate the elegant simplicity of this. I have schemed with this fellow Tamimi to steal Ron's $2 million. Ingram, on behalf of Ron's lawyer, Sherman Linsky, and on behalf of Broker and Miscavige, then pay Tamimi $25,000, and he's the guy who tried to forge the check. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like many things that have been said and done in the name of Ron, truth, being, whatever. It's like many things that have been done for many, many years by somebody who attacks with a viciousness motivated, I submit, by a terror that's almost unparalleled in modern quasi-religious or religious circles. Maybe in the 15th century they burned witches at the stake, or Copernicus had been indicted for claiming that the earth went around, the sun went around the earth, and vice versa, or whatever. But in the 20th century, in a relatively enlightened society in which we live, for an organization, for somebody, to create a fair game policy that said lie, sue, cheat, destroy the enemy, for someone to create a lot of the Guardian's Office hat packs, which I assume a lot of you have seen, but in the operations definition sections, for example, say, we'll find the person's button. If there's a particular PC that's giving the organization a hard time, find their button, locate their button, and then engage in all kinds of harassment activity based on that button. I mean, that's a pernicious thing to do, which I've talked about before. I mean, for someone to enlist their faith, their belief, their commitment, their money, their credibility, their lives in a process, auditing, which is confidential, which has an inherent sense of almost mystical character, where you sit down and you disclose your guts to someone, on the belief that by doing that, you're going to get a benefit, and that by paying $300, $400, $500 an hour, whatever you pay, depending on the going rate, you're going to get the benefit in that person, in that organization, that someone is working for you to get the benefit. When throughout that whole period of time, there's this whole group within the organization that really runs it and controls it. The somebody who's culling that information, pursuant to Guardian Program Order 121669, and then to use it against the person who made that type of inner spiritual commitment, is hideous. That's a shock to me. To my way of thinking, it's a shocking thing to do, to rip someone's soul out of them after emptying their pocketbook so that they can control the activity and conduct and thoughts of that person. It's an outrage. It's a rape worse than rape. It's the rapist, after he rapes the woman, running out on the street and saying, "I raped it, and she loved it, and there's nothing she can do about it. And I'm going to rape her again tomorrow night." It's an outrage. This is equally outrageous. For anyone who believes it, for the people down in the blue building, to be kept under control, under the thumb of Miscavige and Broker, because disinformation and lies of this magnitude are being perpetrated, is not fundamentally right. Let's assume that I did forge the check. What difference does it make? What difference does it make for Hubbard to find my overt and withhold? Suppose I am the criminal that the organization, Miscavige and Broker, say, and I do have the overts and withholds they say. Just because I spend 2 years of my life in a courtroom spending $30,000 out of my own pocket defending Jerry Armstrong, who doesn't have a cent, to get documents released that they're trying to suppress, that those documents show parades of lies. I mean, lies that I could spend 30 minutes talking about just listing the lies. I gave a list of them today to Ben. Outrageous lies. For the organization to try to turn those lies into some form of truth, to divert the data, to change time, place, form, and event, and make it fit what is not time, place, form, and event for their own purposes, is an outrage. It's wrong. So for them to disseminate an article such as appeared in Freedom Magazine, claiming that I'm the head of the mafia in Boston, that I break women's legs. I don't know, I assume a lot of you people have read these things. But I threaten people. I'm a dope dealer. The malpractice premiums in the United States, the rise in malpractice premiums, are my fault. It's ridiculous. That's one of their articles. I mean, if I had done half the things that they've attributed to me, it seems to me I'd either be in jail or I'd be in control of the church. I'd be that clever. But the point of the whole thing, needless to say, what you read in Freedom Magazine is balderdash. It's just more lies. It doesn't have an ounce of truth to it. Prior to July 23rd, 1984, I had never heard of Alaa Fadili Tamimi in my life. I never had any associations, meetings, contacts, communications of any nature or description with Alaa. I didn't know this guy from Adam until a reporter from the LA Times bent over and called me on the phone and said, someone has just filed an affidavit here, some guy named Familio or something, sitting in an Italian prison said that you forged a $2 million check with him on one of Hubbard's accounts. I said, well, who's Familio? It's the point that I'm trying to make is that for the somebody to develop a policy that tries to conceal facts and truth by attacking someone else is an inherent lie. And that's what every person, in my judgment, who has ever been involved with the Church of Scientology has got to come to grips with. The fact that you could try to destroy the credibility of Michael Flynn with this nonsense will not change whether Michael Flynn lied or didn't lie, distorted or didn't distort, what can be determined to be true. For those of you who care enough to find out what the facts are, for those of you who want to determine whether some of the things that have been said about Ron, some of these things you've been hearing, are true, that may cast doubt on what Ron has been saying, should have nothing to do with whether I forged this check or didn't forge this check. Although, believe me, you know, someone get an e-meter and put me out. Don't get led astray, and everyone you know, don't let them get led astray as to what the simplicity and the facts are of the Gerald Armstrong decision. In that decision, Judge Breckenridge, after a 2-month proceeding, 5 weeks of trial, ruled that L. Ron Hubbard was a pathological liar. That's a quote. He ruled that the Church of Scientology was schizophrenic and paranoid, reflective of its founder. He ruled that Mary Sue Hubbard was pathetic. He ruled that the Church of Scientology used PC files to intimidate, extort, blackmail, and harass people. He ruled that the Church of Scientology came into the case with what they call unclean hands, that it had too many overts, and that Mary Sue Hubbard and the Church could not get these documents back that Gerald Armstrong had possession of. Because the judge read the documents, many of which are in L. Ron Hubbard's handwriting. And the documents basically prove that what Ron said was not true about virtually every major aspect of his life, from his childhood to his parenthood, whether he was the father of Alexis Valerie Hollister, to his educational background, his professional background, his writing, his intentions. There are documents in there that I think is the most significant document, is the document he wrote in 1946 that he called the Affirmations, in which his intentions come through as to whether he was motivated to help people or motivated by greed. Now, also, just as you don't get led astray by finding out the truth of L. Ron Hubbard's life, if you're interested in it, or finding out where $500 million has gone, if you're interested in it, or finding out what David Miscavige and Pat Broeker are doing with millions of dollars, if you're interested in it, or finding out what Eugene Ingram is doing, receiving millions of dollars of your money, of Scientologists' money, to frame people, to protect lives. Just as you don't necessarily may not want to get interested in that. Or you may not want to get interested in whether Ron really did flunk out of George Washington University after a semester and a half, which he did. Whether the tech is workable also, and you may find this surprising coming from Michael Flynn, also does not get decided on black PR. Whether Ron flunked nuclear physics or lied about almost everything he ever did may have nothing to do with the workability and the release you can get if it's done properly motivated from the auditing process. Now, just as smearing me won't change what's in the Armstrong documents, smearing Ron won't change whether parts of auditing are workable. So you might say, well, what am I doing then? I'm the guy from Hades at that time who was trying to destroy religious freedom, prevent you people from being able to be audited when you want to be audited. That's equally balderdash. What I'm doing, mostly, unfortunately, is losing money defending Gerald Armstrong. Because what Ron did and others did, and they're Ron's policies, you gotta face up to it. I mean, they're his policies. To attack and destroy anyone who came across his path, I'm fighting back. That's what I'm doing, it's that simple. Whether auditing or parts of the tech are workable, you decide for yourselves. If you get good feelings from it, if parts of it are workable, then that's the way it is. And whether Ron flunked nuclear physics or not may be irrelevant. However, there is one kicker, as I see it. Kicker is, you could take a well-motivated person who could try to sell widgets. And the person may be an honest, loving person. He may have a good flow of being, consciousness, sincerity, integrity. But he may not be able to sell any widgets if the widgets aren't marketed. People don't want to buy them. Even though he could be a real good person and a real good salesman. But suppose you had a person who had a good product, something that anyone would buy, peace of mind, that would give you peace of mind, emotional relief. And you put that in the hands of an ill-motivated person or person. Say, for example, a David Miscavige or a Pat Broeker or an L. Ron Hubbard. And if you read the Armstrong documents, you come away with the feeling that you're dealing with bad motives. Now, this is Michael Flynn's judgment because I've read them. Until you read them yourself, you have to decide for yourself. But suppose you took something that was basically workable, saleable, helpful to people, and you used it for bad motives. You used it to acquire a $500 million fortune that you put in Luxembourg or Liechtenstein bank account. You used it to take advantage all too often of people through heavy ethics or whatever, through an accusatory method of disseminating the tech. And you took advantage of people to such an extent that because of their sincere, honest desire for spiritual freedom to help other people, they became blind to what was going on, to gradually more and more neighbors being taken out of their homes in 1936 and disappearing. When, you know, there are more Volkswagens on the road. The economy's improving. So you think, well, things are pretty good. Tech is basically workable. We'll just let this little incident slide where they put me in heavy ethics and they do this to me and they do that to me. I'll let them degrade me a little bit. That's the error that can't be made. You cannot sell your soul for the tech just as well as you can't sell your soul for anything. And to begin to believe that, as I take it, that people down in the blue building have begun to believe or accept somewhere along the way without conscience. This type of thing, hiring a Eugene Ingram and paying him millions of dollars to concoct this nonsense, whether it's done by greed, whether it's done to simply control for power, becomes a type of cancer that has got to be confronted just like everything else that's confronted in the auditing process. And that's what Miscavige and Broeker and everyone in the blue building has got to do, in Michael Flynn's judgment. They've got to confront the fact that if the tech is delivered by well-motivated people whose intentions are to help, loving intentions, and by loving, I don't mean some pie-in-the-sky sentimental crap. I mean sincere, honest, intellectually honest, confronted fact about the more you help other people, the more help flows back to you. Reality. That kind of motive. If the auditing process is delivered by well-motivated people, and like everything else that has a loving environment, it can work. But if it's delivered because of its powerful psychological aspects by ill-motivated people who are out to get every dollar they can get, regardless of how degraded the person might be at the time, then you're creating a monster. And there's just no question about it. You're creating something that is going to self-destruct, and in the vortex of self-destruction is going to pull other people into that process. The battle, the litigation battle that has taken place with the Church of Scientology, I've always believed had to do with the issues that I'm talking about. Whether auditing is helpful or harmful is for the person undergoing it to make that determination. But whether it's being delivered by a person with ill motives who's trying to take your money to use it for wrongful purposes has got to be decided by everyone who's involved, who's giving them their money. The message that has got to be delivered to every Scientologist, former, present, in the middle, on the fence, up or down, is simply that the auditing process works if there's good intention, there's good ethics, there's not a money-hungry greed behind it, there's not a predisposition to go out and framed Paulette Cooper, Michael Flynn, Ben Gordon, to go out and try to destroy a person's reputation, their psychology, because they happen to disagree with you. Or if because someone like myself happens to defend a Gerald Armstrong who was completely dedicated to Ron. I mean, you couldn't find a more fervent adherent to Ron Hubbard than Gerald Armstrong. I mean, he lived with the guy for 10 years. Hubbard entrusted him with his documents. And he began to look through the documents. And he said, wow, everything I pick up, Ron says this, but this says the opposite. Just lies on top of lies and on top of lies on top of lies. Now, maybe when Ron wrote down the text, whether it was plagiarized or not, maybe when he wrote it down, he did it to help his mind. He was searching, like all of us, for something that would help him. And maybe at times in his life it helped him, and at times in his life it consumed him. And if you get consumed by it, sayonara, then it no longer is workable.